raise a couple more to the revolution.
We have only three words for you.
Uh-oh.
We're taking over!
The world we're alive.
Why not raise a little hay?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the Q-Zero Theater Cast. This is your host, Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, here today with part two in our series on creating an original musical. Last week, I interviewed Justin Scarelli, the primary book writer and originator of the idea for the local new musical, Some Holiday, which premiered at the Players Ring last year. Now, we're going to get to know the composer a little bit more. I interviewed last night Marina Alschiller, who was the person that created most of the music you heard, had the more background in the songwriting department, as well as working a little bit more on stage where Justin came from film. And I think this will give you a little bit more of a complete idea of the entire process. You know, you got a lot from Justin, and now you're going to hear the other side of the coin because musicals, you know, have a little bit more detail than your everyday stage play. So we wanted to make sure that we gave this its fullest breakdown possible. I'm not going to ramble on for any longer. Please enjoy this interview that we have called an original musical part two.
Okay.
I'm an original musical
like Kwamina
and Starlight Express.
My show could be a success
and not a big mess like chess.
And I'll make Broadway my eternal address. Whoa.
Thanks for joining me. Can you start us off by just introducing yourself to our listeners, who you are, and a little bit about your background in theater?
My name is Marina Alschiller. I'm the executive director over at Dive In Productions, and I perform and work on the seacoast of New Hampshire. I decided I wanted to be working in the arts when I was about 10 years old. I started on stage with like the most like bit part lifestyle that you could possibly imagine. And as I got older, headed into high school, into college, realized that I really enjoyed working more in the behind the scenes scope of things. So working as a director, working as a producer, I got to MD a couple of shows, which was a lot of fun. So for the past, I would say 8 or 9 years, really, however old I am now, been doing more stuff on the backstage end of things. So I went to Emerson College for directing and arts administration, and I graduated from there in 2016, always knowing I was going to come back to New Hampshire and work and wanting to work in the New Hampshire arts scene.
And then you've helped form Dive In Productions. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how that came to be and what Dive In's all about?
I started Dive In back in 2014. I was a sophomore in college, and there was a show that I really wanted to do called The Upside of Being Down. It was written by Miles Burns. And it's a beautiful, beautiful TYA show about, you know, kids at a summer camp learning to become friends. And it's one of those beautiful stories that kind of relates to everybody. It's got what I like to think of as the Pixar effect, that it hits kids because they can relate, and it hits adults because it's the things that they want to talk about and want to feel. So I pitched it to the local or to the my college groups, and it didn't get picked up anywhere, mainly because no one wanted to do new works yet. And this was a work that it was going to be the first time it was done outside of New Hampshire. I was kind of done asking permission to do theater. It's a beautiful experience, I think, for everybody. And I knew that I had at least a couple of people who would want to do a show with me. So I held auditions, and out of that cast, it was mostly the non-theater people that I had coming out for me. It was the writers and the communications disorders majors. And I kind of realized that a lot of the people who really wanted theater as a home and felt connected to that community weren't being allowed to be a part of it at Emerson because they weren't theater majors and they had other things they were passionate about. So I started Dive In as a place for anybody who wanted to do theater. And ever since then, that's kind of been our mission, is creating a safe and supportive environment for people, whether it's their first time on stage or first time holding a hammer, or it's, you know, their 100th show, but people who want to support each other.
And I think we've got a lot of crossover in mission with productions, but at the same time, I think we also touch on a couple of different things, which is good. All for, you know, bringing out the new works and new people and trying to grow things. Specifically, we have you on today as a follow-up from our last episode where we talked about your work, or the piece that you guys produced last year with Justin Scarelli and the original musical Some Holiday. Now, I know like a lot of people in the area, you know, write plays, but very few people write musicals because there's just so much more involved. What inspired you to want to create an original musical for Dive In?
Justin had approached me about doing Some Holiday in January of 2019. Which I just decided to take a couple of months and see if I could just focus on working in the arts. So picking up different gigs, and I wanted that to be my number one focus. So when he messaged me about collaborating for this project, it was the perfect timing. I have always worked in some kind of musical setting. I did a cappella for a very, very long time. As nerdy as you can get about collegiate a cappella, like that's where I was at. So I had experience in arranging music, written a couple of songs for kind of one-off things throughout college, but this seemed like a really cool opportunity to try and grow a skill set that I had not fully developed at all. So, you know, I kind of told Justin where my background was. I love musical theater, but I had not, you know, written a group of songs, let alone an entire musical plot line. So this was something that we could learn and grow to do together. So when he asked if I would be down to do it, sent me the script, sent me the original movie, I fell in love with the characters and really was excited to work on telling their stories in that way.
You know, you said you had some experience writing, you know, songs. What did you find to meet, like, right away was the biggest difference between how you'd approach writing, you know, the song that you feel you just need to write today versus when you start putting songs to characters and scripts for a musical?
Biggest thing is creating a motif for each character specifically through their music. So especially with Some Holiday, where each of the characters have these very distinct tracks and personalities and ways that they interact with the world. How can I take that and have it relate to the storytelling that Justin had already put together? I knew that I wanted the characters of Miles and Tracy, especially, who have this really, you know, clear arc of we've got a former rocker and somebody trying to make it in musical theater. You know, that screams how you want to have those two differences in their styles of songs and what you hand to them. So Tracy's have a lot more of this classical feel, while a lot of Miles's sit more in a pop rock. But, you know, that also lends a challenge of how do you take all these contrasting genres and try to put them together in a way that actually makes sense.
You know, you were introduced to this about a year and a half ago, whereas Justin had lived with these characters for almost 10 years. So what was it like going from just his baby, if you will, to kind of becoming the adoptive parent of this piece? And, you know, so what was that like where, again, you know, these characters had been with him for so long and you were taking them in for the first time?
Justin and I work really well together. He is somebody who I think understands me when I'm trying to express something but not quite finish the sentence, and I think I can do the same for him. We definitely lock in on a creative level very, very nicely in a way that is rare to find in a creative partner, at least in my experience, that you just get what they're trying to say to you. For me, meeting these characters for the first time, I think it really lends itself to Justin's storytelling ability in that I find something to relate to in each of these characters. And I think that came out in some of the songs, especially that felt more personal to me while writing them, that felt more personal to Justin while writing them. But for him to kind of open it up, you know, that's a really vulnerable experience for somebody to say, here's this thing that I've spent a decade working on, and do you want to be a part of it? So I felt like I was getting to know these characters through their songs, where he had kind of a base of what they wanted to be. But throughout the entire process, these characters have, while I think their cores have stayed the same, they've shifted a lot to become these really beautiful three-dimensional people. And Justin's been super open and collaborative in putting that together. But it is scary. You know, somebody hands you something and says, work with me on it, and not wanting to do wrong by these characters.
Were there moments of, you know, you had a great idea, but Justin held firm to his original vision? Or did either of you have some hills you felt you needed to die on that the other one, you know, butted heads? And then how did you go about solving issues like that where it was a, you know, a co-collaboration?
I don't think we butted heads on anything musically. There were certain songs that I think both of us just, we had these really clear ideas of what it should be, and it took a very long time to figure out where it was going. So Tracy's audition song is, we wanted it to have kind of this Italian storytelling aria feel to it. And for the life, we could describe it, we could picture it, we knew where it was going to go. And for some reason, every time I tried, I kept writing like Irish ballads and Irish drinking song, no matter what I did, they just kept getting very, very, very Irish. And I would send it to Justin just saying, I'm sorry, maybe we're closer. and he sent me a version one day where he had just locked into it. I'm sitting there like, yeah, that was it. After like 17 versions of this unfortunate Irish drinking song. Yeah, I really don't think there was anything we clashed on. We've definitely debated lyrics back and forth, but it's always in the vein of, is this the character? Is this the line that we think is going to be, you know, funny or more evocative?
I kind of want to build a little bit on that where you talked about, you know, like working a piece. Like I have no formal legitimate songwriting experience other than like improvising lyrics and melodies while I'm making breakfast or something like that. But I have a lot of experience workshopping scripts. How do you workshop a song? Like what is that process like? Like is it similar to workshopping a scene where, like, you know, you write a draft, you have the actors read it, you take it back, maybe you let them ad lib a little bit. Like where do you start, and then where do you go when you're trying to take the song from first draft to final draft?
So workshopping a song is very similar to workshopping a script. Really the core of it being, you need to go in with the full understanding and ability to say, everything I've written could get scrapped right now because it might not be right. And that's, you know, that's something that can be difficult to deal with. One of the biggest things for me through the whole process is the way that my voice sits when I sing. I'm a very low alto. So what I think is a comfortable range for a soprano or a tenor is nowhere near what their actual comfortable ranges are.
Right.
So everything I was writing, it was either too low or too high, because I'm just shooting around trying to figure out, like, how does anybody else's voice work? So that was that was like one of the biggest changes we had to keep making. Like, Marina, you've written a song that is in nobody's range again. Like, okay, we're going to fix it. As far as actually workshopping the song, my favorite directing teacher, the best thing she ever told me was, you know, if your actor has an idea, let them try it. You know, if you've got the time, it's not going to put anybody in danger, always let them try the idea, because it might be 1,000 times better than what you ever came up with. And that is something that stuck with me and is a huge part of the way that I view directing and workshopping. So, you know, for example, Hello Goodbye, which is one of my absolute favorite songs. It's Grace's song when she is, you know, saying hello to her child and figuring out who she is in this new life path. The way that it was originally written, it was a lot slower than it was in the actual production of it. I think just like very pulled back. And Ali Aramento and Tim Goss, during one rehearsal, wanted to take a little bit of an experiment with it to see, like, what if we picked up the tempo? What if we really elevated some of these higher moments? What if we changed where the peak of this phrase was? And I wasn't at the rehearsal. I was working that evening. They sent it over to me and I heard it. And I was like, that is how this was supposed to sound this whole time. And you guys found that. And it's not something that I thought of. So I think at the beginning stages, just allowing people to say either, you know, from a logistic standpoint, this doesn't work in my voice, or, hey, I would love to breathe at some point. Could we maybe add that in? And taking those to heart. But then from an artistic standpoint, for your actors, they're the ones who are living in these characters. So if they have something that's going to make the story feel more real for them in that moment, always saying, yes, let's try it. And if it works, that's going to be amazing. And if it doesn't, at least we tried.
That's always good when you've got collaborative actors that are willing to take risks and try things and you have that environment. You kind of started to talk about it a little bit. And Justin had mentioned, you know, one thing that was a little bit difficult for him was realizing there were too many ballads in the show and having to eliminate a couple of things. Did you have any big kill your babies moment? And what, you know, what is that like as an artist? And what are the, you know, the difficulties there?
Our biggest kill your baby, or the one that I felt the most deeply, we had written this song called Here at the Art Show, and it was beautiful. I really like it. I still think it's gorgeous. And we hadn't gotten to that stage in the rehearsals yet. And we're watching the scene and we both kind of look at each other and just know that it's not going to work. And we had spent forever on this song. Like it was complicated melodically. We had these overlapping harmony lines and we had put so much effort into it. And we're sitting watching the rehearsal and both thinking, it's not going to work anymore. Mm. So that song got cut before. I think we played it for Joel and Allie one time, never taught it to them. And we cut it after, you know, weeks of working on it. So, you know, saying goodbye to that song, I would say in this rewrite process, as we look ahead towards what we want the show to be, I've lost a couple of songs that I really enjoyed, but I know they're not right. Like I feel really confident in cutting them, even though I was proud of the work that I did, because I know to push the story forward, they don't fit anymore. So there's a song in Act One called Hey Love that I really loved. I like quartets. I think they're fun when you get them. It had some fun overlapping melodies, and we're cutting it in this new version because all it does is let you know where the characters are now. And we've already seen it. We've been watching it for 25 minutes. So there's no reason for us to keep saying we're all struggling right now. Might as well do something new there. You know, I'm a huge fan of the Red Pen, though. So it's tough to let stuff go. But when you know it's right, then just let it go. I
100% agree. My favorite composer is Sondheim. And if you buy his, he published his complete collected works as this two volume tomes, and in it though he does put all of the different songs and versions of things that he's cut from shows, and then he goes into why these songs didn't work. And I feel I learned so much more about both, you know, writing and structuring a show and directing a show from him explaining why these things didn't work rather than just reading why, you know, the things did work. As you said, it's very important to be able to identify when it's like, this is a fantastic song, but it doesn't belong in this show.
Yeah, we'll have a great B-sides album.
Yeah, those are always fun. Like, I love when they release like a deluxe edition of a show recording and they're like, here's all the songs we cut. And that's like, although that's one thing where I can kind of tell if I'm going to agree with somebody on their opinions on theater, if they go like, oh, this song needs to go back into the show because it's awesome. And I'm like, but it doesn't fit in the text. But then they're like, yes, but it's a great song. Like, we have two different opinions of what's important in a musical. Justin's background, he talked a lot about, you know, he came more from film where, you know, it appears you came more from stage. So, like, what adjustments were there in working, you know, with a co-director who mostly works for another medium? And what did you find were the biggest challenges in translating something that was originally written to be filmed to placing it on a stage?
Honestly, the logistics. So, you know, when you're in film, you can cut between scenes very quickly and you don't need to think about getting anybody on and off stage. You don't need to think about where things are located. Where's that block going? Where's that bar going? So we had a lot of quick scenes, especially right up at the top, and they need to move very, very fast in between them. Just that very simple logistic of how did people get on this stage and how did all of the things they need get there very quickly? And how do we do that without a 15-minute scene change, whatever that might be? And you're granted that opportunity in film of a quick cut and you're exactly in the kitchen you needed to be in. But in theater, you're moving 18 pots and pans and, you know, right, Hoping you don't drop anything on your way.
Yeah, and I'm sure those issues are exacerbated in a space like the Players Ring where you can't hide anything because the audience is right up on you and on all sides, basically.
blocking scene changes in the players' ring is one of my favorite art forms, to be honest. If you can do it quickly, but it, I would say that blocking a scene change, and I think this in theater in general, but blocking a scene change is more, just as important, if not, you know, more important than blocking the scene. Like, you're going to lose momentum if you don't have it clean. And then, as you know, as far as moving from film to theater, it's a slightly different, it's a different storytelling medium. You know, one of the things that you see a lot in actors discussing their transition between film and theater is the ability to really focus on intimate facial expressions and how does that affect the way that you interact with your other characters. Whereas in theater, while even in an intimate space like the player's ring, your face is a tool, but it's really down to your whole body and how you're carrying yourself and interacting with your environment, you know, from the neck down. It's because everything you're doing is seen. And I think that's a huge, that's another big part. It really is that in film, you are able to hide some of the how it's happening. Whereas in theater, everything that's going to happen is exposed and available to the audience. So every single motion, every single movement is a part of the storytelling aspects.
Now, with this particular piece, you know, there was the added challenge of it being a non-linear story where the scenes, you know, jump back and forth between different time periods. What unique challenges did that present to you as a, you know, co-director as well as the composer?
From day one, it's just making sure that you're not accidentally revealing a plot point in a song that hasn't come up yet because it's 6 months earlier, or 3 months earlier, whatever that might be. And I think that really does play into the way that the music fits. We had a couple of songs that we had been workshopping early on that had a reprise later on. But when we got to it, when we got to seeing how the show fit together, the reprise made a lot of sense where it was, but the song itself wouldn't make any sense in the context. And it, you know, how do you repeat a theme that you can't visit yet? And I think for the characters too, being able to give them the opportunity to develop, I guess to earn their big climactic moment in song. It's a six protagonist show in my view. I think that each of these characters is so essential to each other. And I think that's just getting stronger as we continue to change the script and change the music. And each of them has their moment, their song, whatever that might be, where we just get to be with them for that moment. And for some of them, it comes very, very early on. You know, Grace's big song is maybe 15 minutes into the show. So how do we get her to the point where her character has earned that moment? So we are with her, we are sympathizing with her. And I think the way that we earn it is through a different character. You know, we get to see Tracy's fear while she's actively being a mom. And that's what gives us the right to see this other character fear the oncoming experience. So as far as the non-linearness, as far as that storytelling element goes, it, for me on the music side, it really comes down to, did a character earn this dramatic peak? And, you know, as Justin was saying, we realized that there were too many ballads and we hadn't earned them yet. We hadn't earned, you know, everybody's emotional tipping points at that, in that moment. We need some of the lighter things or the more confrontational moments in order to let somebody break. You know, you can't just have people breaking left and right, because as emotional as one song might be, if you do that every other moment for 25 straight songs, you're not only exhausted, you're losing the emotional impact that one big break could have.
Again, where this was like your first time writing a musical, what resources did you use and find helpful? Like, were there any books or documentaries, or did you reach out to other composers that might have worked on things? Like, what tools did you give yourself since you didn't have your own experiences to rely on?
The first thing I did was go back and just re-listen to the musicals that had a really big effect on me specifically because of their music. And that included some new works. I went back and listened to, you know, the work that Miles did for The Upside of Being Down, because I knew what emotions he got out of me for that. I listened to some works by a friend of mine who is really good at writing a narrative and a full character in one song. I don't know if Justin mentioned, but we both love Jason Robert Brown. And I think specifically because he's a storyteller in, I mean, for me, he's a storyteller in what he does. So I wanted to listen back to musicals that really focus in on connecting you to a character very quickly that are grounded in some kind of reality, because that's where these characters are. You know, they're anybody. We're not in a period piece. We're not in, you know, another reality. We're not in another scope of time. It's now, whenever now is, and these are real people who are doing things that we could all really experience. So the first thing I did is went back and listened to what I enjoy is good narrative musical theater. And then I was going and listening to some composers who I really like. I love Ryan Scott Oliver. I think that his stuff is really interesting, and he is so skilled at playing with the traditional norms of a song or musical theater and saying, here are the four chords I'm going to use, and here's how I distorted it just a little bit so that it's not like something you've heard before. So going back and, you know, hearing the way that he interprets lyrics and chord progressions. So that was kind of the big research that I was doing, is really, you know, who are composers that I like their work and respect their work? Who is a good storyteller, and what got me to feel the way that I feel in this moment? There's this one key, like if you play a song in D flat, I don't know why, but every time a song is played in D flat, like my emotions are sent to a 10 for no reason. You just put it there and I'm sold. I don't need much else. So I knew that. And when I knew that, that's how that musical key made me feel. So when I'm writing Hello Goodbye, which is supposed to be this emotional moment, I started there. And the second I played in that, you know, just in that first chord, I knew I was going to be in the right direction.
I never would have thought of that. You had a specific key that you associate with specific emotional moments. So then, like, as you were building it, besides the actors, were there anything during the process of creating the show, or even, you know, post the run and where you guys have been working on it now for a little bit, that you sought out feedback or, you know, additional help with?
Yeah, absolutely. When I had songs that I was feeling good about, I, you know, first I would send them to Justin. Two of us would talk about it. But then I have a couple of friends who are, you know, trained in composing for musical theater. I would say, what do you think about this? You know, does this make sense to you? Does the story moment make sense to you? Once the show went up, I love feedback. I really do. And I think it's a sign of, you know, people wanting the work to get better if they can give you a constructive piece of criticism. So we sought it out. You know, we talked to people who had seen the show. I was talking to, like, all of my family members who are never shy to let me know if something worked or didn't work, which is great. I've definitely learned a lot from there. But we were asking our audience, you know, like, A, how did this character make you feel? Did these songs work? How was the length of the show? Like, it's down to little things like that. You know, you could have a great story, but if it's 3 hours long and you lose people halfway through, did you really do your job? I don't think so. So especially coming out of it, we've been trying to gather more feedback. I was talking to Janae McCartan over here on the Seacoast, who runs, like, all of the theater reviews for the Seacoast area. And I really enjoyed getting to hear kind of what her feedback was as far as the characters and how somebody, you know, how a theater critic is looking at it. And I was talking to her about some of the changes and, you know, hearing how she was responding to those felt like we were headed in the right direction. So yeah, we've been talking to people outside of the actors too, which is nice. And Tim, you know, Tim Goss and Miles Ahlstrom, who did all of the orchestrations with us, the two of them are just some of the most brilliant musicians I've ever met. So sometimes I'll come up with something, send it to them and be like, is this music? Is it? and their opinion, you know, it means the world to me, because I know when they say something, it's it's coming from a very, very well thought out place.
Now, being on the other side of it, like, what was your biggest takeaway regarding just the process of creating a musical? Like, what will you do differently the next time you approach something? Or what advice would you give to somebody who wants to create a musical?
One of the biggest things I learned is not being afraid to try something. Not being afraid to try something, you know, at the start of the creation process when you're truly not sure if it's going to work. There are some songs that, there's a song that was never played during the rehearsal process. The actors didn't hear it until after we had closed because I was just not proud of the work. I had this idea for a song for Grace and Sam, and it was this like cutesy little poppy bop called The Parent Zone. And in the moment, I was so proud of it. And then I listened to it 2 weeks later. I was like, no one can ever hear this. No one can know I've come up with this. So it became a running joke, you know, throughout the entire process of like, when do we get to hear Parent Zone? I don't know. Could be the song of a century. It's not. But but what it did show us, you know, what I wish I had played it for them earlier, even though I was pretty embarrassed about the work itself, because it actually does kind of inform the relationship between Sam and Grace and plays with the fact that they are best friends and they're fun together. You know, they don't just come together for serious moments. They're goofy and have that side of themselves. So I think, you know, going into this next process, and there are a couple other musicals that I've kind of started work on, haven't gotten too deep into them yet, but not being afraid to show the things that, you know, even if they feel silly or, you know, you might be embarrassed about what other people think of them, just letting it rip and seeing if anything out of it sticks. Because even though the song, you know, for me is not my proudest moment as a composer or a songwriter, you know, the actors got something out of it and I wish I had given it to them early on. I think for other people going into writing a musical, really, really good musical theater touches you in a way that I don't think any other art form really can. You know, music has this beautiful, visceral experience for us as people. That's why we feel our hearts filling up, or why we get excited or cheer along at concerts, is because there's something so beautifully human about that connection. So allowing yourself to say, you know, I'm writing this song and I'm not writing a song because it's a musical. I'm writing this song because there's no other way for me to express where I'm at right now. You know, there's the really common thing where it's like in a musical, you know, when you can't talk anymore, you sing, and when you can't sing anymore, you dance. But it holds true. Like, music is human and it's a common language for all of us. You know, we can hear a melody with no words, and it doesn't matter, you know, where we, what our musical background is, what language we speak, what our interaction with the arts world has been, you know, it can touch every person in a different way. So remembering that music is just innately human and giving yourself that experience. And I think the other big thing is really just having fun. You know, you can get so stressed out about writing the best song, or I need this to have this certain effect, but music is fun. Like, we sing because it's a joyous experience, or it's the thing we need to do in the moment. So, you know, in the same way you allow your characters to sing because it's the way they express themselves, allow yourself to write because it's the thing you need to do.
Hello, Q0 fans. Q0 business advisor and performer Jake Ranlett here, interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast to talk about Q0 sponsorship and membership. As I'm sure you know, theater is really expensive, and we cannot survive on ticket sales alone, which is why we have these two awesome programs that not only allow Q0 to continue to revolutionize the performing arts scene in New Hampshire, but has incredible benefits for you as well. Sponsors get their name and logo in our playbill, on our posters, mentioned in our podcasts, listed on our press releases, and so much more. We go out of our way to make sure everyone knows about you and thanks you for helping make Q0 possible. We also have our membership program for individuals who want a little bit more bang for their buck and a lot more Q0 in their lives. We have 10 different levels of membership, starting as low as $2 a month. Every level of membership comes with awesome perks, such as early access to the Q0 Theater Cast, discounts on tickets and merchandise, exclusive behind-the-scenes video content, the ability to read our new works blog, and so much more. The more you give, the more you get. If you want to be a vital part of the Q0 revolution, head on over to czthreater.com and click the Support CZT link to become a sponsor or a member today. And now, back to the podcast.
Beautifully said. You guys are planning on bringing this to the Hatbox once they resume programming. What have been the biggest things that you are changing coming out of the last production to this one, and what brought about those changes?
I am so excited about these changes. I think the biggest thing that we've realized is that, you know, there are two characters in particular, Chris and Miles, who we really wanted to flush out more. I have a soft spot for the character of Miles, I think because his songs are my favorite songs in the show. So I'm just team Miles all the way. But we kind of realized, you know, in the first iteration, and we realized this throughout the rehearsal process too, is the way that he was originally written, it can sometimes come off as a little bit of a martyr, which makes the job of Tracy and the actress portraying Tracy that much more difficult, in that you need to get the audience on your side when almost immediately they're going to be off of it. So what we wanted to see is, how can we get to know, you know, how can we get to see her breaking point earlier? But what does that mean for Miles? You know, a breaking point isn't a one person experience. You know, it comes out of all of these other external factors. So where is Miles when Tracy is about to break? So we've added in new songs for Miles that I'm really excited about. And I think we get to see him more, which raises their stakes in turn. And then for the character of Chris, what we really wanted to do is, you know, we just wanted to get to know him more. He's got this song that we really liked in Act Two, called Client Notes, where he's going through his paperwork and also talking about where he's kind of standing and feeling alone and not wanting to feel alone. But in the same way that, you know, Miles is unfaltering in his dedication to, I'm staying at home and nothing's changing. You know, the character of Chris is just kind of was unfaltering in, I'm sticking in this relationship and I'm doing it because this is the right thing to do. So we wanted to give him and Sam more ability to flirt and have fun with each other, you know, in the same way that we wanted to get rid of some of the ballads and find more ways to incorporate, you know, other emotional peaks. We wanted to bring in a little more of the fun that makes you really like these people and root for them, so that if things don't work out, you know, it hits that much harder because you really wanted it to. The other big change that I'm so excited about is, we, in listening back to a lot of the stuff, our favorite songs are the group numbers. There's something amazing when these six people hit harmony together that, you know, you can't get in a solo number because it's one person. So we wanted to find out, you know, if we're interlocking their storylines so much more, can we interlock their musical tracks a lot more? So, you know, how do they relate to each other? Not just in, let's put them in physical spaces together more often, but how does this person's song interact with where this person's at in their story? Can we add in, basically, can we make it even more of an ensemble show? So rather than watching, you know, three different couples and kind of watching their three shows, can we really lock into the fact that this is a six-person ensemble that's going to work together to build up each other's characters and musical tracks the whole time? So I'm really excited. We've added in a couple of new group numbers, changed some of the existing numbers to be duets and trios and quartets. We have a quintet that I'm beyond excited about. So those are some of the ones that, like, I'm the most excited for.
Now, do you have any concern about over-fixing things, or as I like to call it, George Lucasing, when you keep going back to it and adding and adding and adding, and sometimes you overdo it. How do you personally like identify when it's time to stop?
I think because Justin and I are such editors, our immediate thought is, all right, back to square one. Here we go. Which is good in a way, but also it means like you got to slow yourself down for a second. The way we would know if we've gone too far is if the core of the character changes. So, you know, even in adapting it from the film script to the stage script to the one, you know, to the stage script they got on day one versus what got put up at the Players Ring, so much changed. New interactions were added, new scenes, arcs were totally altered, but the core of each of the characters stayed the same throughout the whole thing. So what we kind of did when we started talking about here's what we want to change and why we want to change it, is we went through the story and kind of picked the moments that, you know, really have stood out to us throughout the process of like, all right, these are their pivotal moments. How do we get them there in a cleaner way? And in a way that makes more sense. So, you know, that's kind of been our process. And at the same time, one of my favorite things about this whole process has been how collaborative it is with the cast and with our musicians, and opening up the dialogue for everybody to say, this is working, this isn't working, can we do this? What if we tried this? So, you know, they're also a really good system of checks and balances. You know, if something's not working, or if something's gotten taken away that meant a lot to that character, you know, they're also a really, really good system to kind of check in and see, like, do you still feel like this is the same person?
Now, beyond the Hatbox, what are your hopes and dreams for the future of the piece? Like, how, if everything went well and according to plan, where do you hope this goes? And then what do you need to do to take those next steps to get it there?
I really believe in this piece. I am incredibly self-critical when it comes to a lot of things that I do. And I'm definitely kind of my own worst enemy in that regard. But I really, really believe in this piece. I think the characters and the story that Justin have created are just beautiful and so relatable. So I do think that this has, I think that it's kind of just started on its journey. And that's something Justin and I have talked a lot about. You know, next steps, we've been planning on recording an album or doing an EP, just some kind of permanence that we can get out, put online, let more people hear it. Pie in the sky dreams, we've talked about doing like a tour through colleges and, you know, seeing if we can team up with educational programs. We've talked about doing concerts of it in different venues. You know, I think my big dream at some point would be, you know, get it to a place where you can license it and let it go and let other people experience and play and see what they come up with. That's one of my absolute favorite parts about creating, is letting it go and seeing what somebody else does.
I've been on the opposite end of that. You know, I've gotten to be the first person to direct somebody else's play that wasn't directed by the playwright, but I haven't had the fortune yet of giving my play to a different director and seeing what happens. And I'm sure it's a scary but exciting experience. I'm hoping that sometime soon we can, do more of that with Q0. Is there anything you were hoping I was going to ask you about that we didn't discuss, or just anything you really want to say about Some Holiday and or Dive In Productions and or writing a musical?
Writing the music for Some Holiday, you know, became a very personal experience over the course of it. You know, there are certain songs in there that in the moments I was writing them, like, that's exactly where I was. There's this one, the song that we're placed here at the art show for Grace and Dan is called Grow Up. And it's about, you know, meeting your adult expectations and what you need to do to be a functioning member of society while also trying to live dreams. And, you know, I think that's something that almost everybody in the arts experiences on a near daily basis of like, am I doing the right thing? Am I setting myself up for the life that I want to live? And I had written that song, you know, while sitting outside of the Agunqua Playhouse while I was working there and, you know, loving working at the playhouse, but also, you know, being worried about all of the other things I wanted to do. And, you know, would I be able to afford to do those things if I kept working, you know, in the arts, could I maintain working, you know, X number of jobs at any given time to make ends meet. And that's, I think that's what's so good about this show is, you know, if you're an artist, if you're not an artist, everybody is somewhere. Everybody, I think, is one of these characters or a combination of one of these characters, you know, whether it's the parts about themselves that they want to look at or the parts that they, you know, for me in that moment really didn't want to look at, but kind of needed to for a second. And that's what I think is so beautiful about it. And, you know, doing that process too, a lot of us who were involved in that, I had worked with everybody in that cast beforehand. So a lot of us had just come out of Dogfight together. I had worked with Jake on Little Shop. I had worked with Nicole at Opening Night Mutiny. So I had been with all of these people before and had a sense of, you know, what their work styles were. But I think this group really leaned into the thing that I enjoy most about theater and what I try to do for Dive In, and that every voice in the room is really valuable to me and everybody's opinion is really, really, really valued. And I think that these actors and this team really took that to heart. And that's what brought the show to where it was, you know, in November, is because as a community, I really believe that everybody does theater because they really want to be there. So give everybody the opportunity and the space to say where they're feeling and what they want to change and what they want to grow, because that's what's going to create something really special. So I think that team really leaned into that as well.
Such a wonderful creative environment. I think that's something that we all as directors and artists in general always want, you know, when an environment where people are playing off of each other, comfortable, feel good about, you know, giving ideas, and then we can all create the best show possible. Thanks for this, you know, wonderful interview. I personally learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners will too. And I look forward to, as I said, once, you know, live performance starts up again and they start putting together the new, or the, however they're doing it, season at the Hatbox, that some holiday gets to go up again and we'll be seeing it real soon. So thank you for, you know, taking some time to chat, and look forward to seeing more of your work.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you once again to Marina for that wonderful interview. Incredibly insightful. Hope everybody enjoyed learning about the creation process behind original musicals over the last two episodes. On our next episode, we have what could possibly be the greatest podcast in the history of the Q0 Theater cast. Nay, if I may say, in the history of podcasts. We are doing a directing round table. So talking all things directing for theater with myself, Southern New Hampshire's Mike Wood, Theater Kapow's Matt Cahoon, and the University of New Hampshire's David Kay. You are not going to want to miss this. This episode's already been recorded, and it is, I'm about to start editing it right now, and I am telling you, you are going to get a masterclass in directing philosophy for free when you listen to this podcast. Do not miss this episode. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your friends' family and your family's friends. This is going to be a mind-blowing episode. Please do stay tuned to social media. We will be announcing auditions for Heathers and Romeo and Juliet very shortly, before the end of the month. Also just wrapped up interviews with our prospective directors for season 3. Cannot wait to start putting together the season, which will be announced on opening night of Heathers. We will announce the season 3 lineup. And finally, I want to thank all of our sponsors, supporters, members, and donors. Loon Chocolate, Chef Sean Harris, NH Tunes, Greg Powers, Keller Williams, Creva Academy, Public Charter School, SOA Entertainment, Lori Pelletier, Alex Bezos. If you'd like to become a sponsor, you know, help Q0 continue to spread our revolution, please head over to our website, click the Get Involved tab, and learn how you can become a member, a sponsor, or a donor today. Every little bit helps. Well, that about covers everything I wanted to say today. Thank you all again for listening. One final time, this is Artistic Director Dan Pelletier. And as we always say on the Q0 Theater Cast, support local theater, and join the revolution.